Hi, this is Fangs and Fonds.
It's a good thing I didn't introduce us, otherwise I would have said Unfurled.
Actually, I was thinking Unfurled too.
Especially with that kind of an opening, you're just like, hey!
So should I actually do an opening?
This is fuck surface.
I think we've started now.
I was waiting for that.
So, I am your writing Spiderful voice.
I'm your writing Ferret Roland.
I'm the spotty one, Yanara.
And I'm the striped one, Ocean.
Epic
co marking.
Epic fist bumps, folks.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Fangs and Fonts. Hopefully you made it through that cyberpunk episode. I know some of us dropped dead and had to be rebooted.
I didn't come with the proper software. Sorry.
Had to insert a flash drive.
Oh.
Had to find the right port.
Like, I have nothing. I'm just moving right along.
Yeah. So, we've got some feedback to our Cyberpunk episode.
Thank you all for your feedback.
Thank you for your feedback. One of the things that we realized after the fact that we didn't discuss was furries in a cyberpunk world. There's not a lot you can say. Mostly, in my own personal opinion, it offers more limbs for you to implant shotguns into and so much and so forth.
Shotgun tail and antenna ears.
At what point does biomodding or creating anthropomorphic people, does that count as cyberpunk, or does that count as a biopunk?
And I think it's biopunk. I think it would be cyberpunk if you had someone who, say, replaced their fingernails with steel claws and their, you know, like their cybernetic implants. I mean, and this is one thing that was brought up. For those that haven't read it, Chipotle, Watts's Live Journal, has a really good response to our cyberpunk episode. He touches on it really, really well. He brings up a lot of points that we unfortunately didn't bring up. And he also lists some really good cyberpunk books that I would highly recommend anyone, you know, who's interested in the genre go and actually read, because it was far more extensive than what we talked about, because unfortunately, yes, we talked mostly about movies. We didn't talk about literature.
And we're sorry for that.
Yeah, shame and we're sorry for that. Shame. Shame.
To be fair, it was our first genre podcast, so we're still learning.
You need to give us feedback.
Well, we didn't really think of the points to talk about beforehand and kind of forgot about talking about the writing part of it.
We got caught up in the moment.
We were tired.
So, but one of the things that Watts did point out is there is a steampunk anthology that is up on Amazon and Indigo. And if it's for the ebook, I think it's only like $6. And he highly recommends it. So I've already picked up my copy. But I suggest anyone go check out it's Chipotle on his Live Journal. Got it here somewhere. But
and you know, with cyberpunk and furry, there is an aspect there that I think is untouched. What impact would it have mixing both technology and anthropomorphics? So
I think one of the ways to approach it is think Shadowrun. What happens when you take cyberpunk and mix it with fantasy? You have Shadowrun. Well, it's the same thing. If you take cyberpunk and furry, how are those two elements going to integrate, much like...
What makes a cyberpunk story? What makes a furry story? And how can those integrate together?
Exactly. Because you can make it so much more than a cyberpunk story that has furry characters.
Yeah, a furry story is always better when it's just not just a story that is just furry characters.
Yeah.
Speaking of characters.
Yes. Tonight's episode.
How can we make characters and not cardboard cutouts?
Who wants to start? Because Ocean and I have been talking a lot, and you guys have been sitting there flailing fingers around like tentacled monsters.
Sorry, I'm like trying to traverse to the webmail for Fangs and Fonts. So anyway,
we've all read stories where there's a character that's in it, and
by just kind of reach in and throttle,
or by the end of it, you completely forgot they were there. Or you could take them out of the story and nothing would change.
There's two broad strokes we can sort of take with this. What makes a good character or what makes a bad character? Because I think what makes a bad character is a little more fun. That we should talk about the good traits of character development. What do you want your characters to be like? What makes them a likable character? What makes you want them to succeed?
Well, I guess the top of the list is believability.
You want believability
or relatability? Because you can have a believable character that you want to fail so hard.
I think for me, it's believability because just you can't always have a character that will relate to you specifically just because everyone's so individual in the trials and tribulations that they've gone through. So I think at that point, just running into something that's believable is a little more likely. You know, running into, you know, the gregarious, slightly heavyset character is believable. But I don't have to be a gregarious, heavyset character to know that that typecast exists, and I enjoy it.
So what makes a believable character for you?
For me specifically? Believe it or not, relatability is probably a little lower on the scale. If I'm looking in,
the character doesn't have to be relatable to be believable.
It's true, no, but it has to be something that I see regularly. Like I said, you know, the gregarious character that's heavy set, or you've got, you know, the waif who's skinny. You know, both of her parents aren't dead and she doesn't have superpowers. But I guess it's just a case of I've seen that type of person in my life and I've related to them, not personally, but just in my life. You know, they exist as a character at some point in the world, therefore I could see it in a book as being more believable.
How does it work when you're writing a story that is in a scenario that is in a typical unbelievable world?
Like cyberpunk.
Then I'm valid. I think at that point I take the best suited character from my bank of people I know and just make it a little more out there.
See, for me, I think you take a character that is believable. Like, take yourself. Don't literally, but
please don't put yourself in your books.
We'll save that for after, anyway.
Taking a character you love and putting them in a different scenario is a lot of your writing. You're usually doing that and seeing how they would react.
Well, I'll admit one thing. You know the infamous lemur character. Did they make her lemur or raccoon in one of the lemur. Punked? Yeah, in the lemur in the punked I'm writing. That'd be one of my cousins right there. What can I say? I don't have a lot of information.
for me, believable is not... Basically, for a believable character for me, it has to be... Their actions have to be coherent with what they do. They everyone does something for a reason. Every action you do has a cause and something that's in their personality and in their history that is causing them to react the way that they are. If a character reacts completely out of character for themselves, kid was abused all his life and has become a cowering mess, and suddenly just out without any given reason, a bully ends up shoving him and he turns around and stabs him with a bunch of knives.
If it's not the
tipping point.
As someone voted like most likely to shoot up a school in high school, I consider myself an expert on this.
You subject. Were that too?
Yes.
Nice. I did not realize we had that in common.
Yeah. No. I was like that person that was always so quiet.
But I mean, there's always that point where it's like there's always going to be a tipping point where the character's personality is going to change. But if he has never shown anything in the story that he's going to do that, having him suddenly do it becomes unbelievable because it's against everything that's in his history.
At that point, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, But that's the thing, is it's completely it's unbelievable. It's not something within his character. I mean, everyone, you got to remember that your character has a whole history behind him, and that's what's driving a lot of his actions.
Hence development?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of history that's not put down in words. But you got it as a writer, especially in longer works, you have to have those kind of things in your mind when you write it.
In a sense, I think that a believable character is also a relatable character, even if you don't relate to them personally.
Mm.
Because a character has to do something that you can look at this objectively and say, that is something that a real person would do. Like, this is how, you know, maybe not a normal person, but this is how I could see someone reacting to a particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
So they are relatable in that sense, even if it's not something that you would personally do.
Yes. However, I find having both believability and relatability in a story. I was talking earlier before we recorded about how the two things that I nitpick the most on my reviews is the believability and relatability of characters. If they only have one of those two, that's fine. I'm not going to criticize them for it, but if they have neither of them, they have failed completely in making their character.
So I guess that kind of brings it right back to what, to the positive points of what makes good character development.
So, us as people, what makes us? You know, we right. have our experiences, we have the way we grew up, we have the Sorry. People we interact, the things we like, and that continues to build with us as we go through life. So you'd think that your character would be similar, and that the experiences they go through, coming to conflicting situations. I don't know if you guys have ever heard, I think it's like a website called The End or something. It's a little web game, but it makes you go through difficult decisions and like, what are your thoughts on euthanasia and things like that, you know?
Well, like, one of the things that makes a character likable for me is that real people do have flaws. You know, nobody is perfect, and especially when you have stories are generally into the mind of, you know, someone that you wouldn't generally understand otherwise, you know, like, you only generally get to see the exterior of people, so you're looking into the lives of, you know, someone who isn't perfect, even if they seem to be. You know, their life may be perfect. You know, you get essentially the Facebook snapshot of a person's life. But when you're actually writing a character, you're creating this believable person. They have flaws. They have talents. They can be really good at something and, you know,
really horrible at something else.
Like, there are so many varying degrees of what makes up a person that, you know, like Ocean was saying, that I forget all of what you said, but anyway.
Thanks for listening.
I listened, I forgot.
You listened, you didn't process.
But anyway, main point, people have flaws and so should your characters.
Would that be a grounds for, you know, argument that before you write a story, you kind of write your character's history? It's like, I know off of left field, when you play D&D, sometimes we get extra experience points for writing a character history. Would something like that help with your character development, you think?
I've personally never... I don't want to sound egotistical, but I've never had to.
Really?
Well, true, but
I found it really helps the story.
Or even if I make history I do, in my head. But most of the time, it doesn't even matter unless it specifically comes up in the story.
You're playing in the wrong RP groups.
Well, what if you don't...
Well, no, I was going to say...
I'm not talking about D&D.
Oh, I thought you were talking
about... I'm talking about writing.
Yeah, what if you're not writing the character's history, but what if you're, you know, you sit down with a character spec in mind and you state, okay, this character's going to be like this because... And then you just go off on a little mental vacation and create this character in your head. Is that something that could work for character development as well?
I write about characters a lot in the same way that I look at the people I know. I already know what their characteristics are. You know, like, I know how... I can guess how your voice or Ocean might react to things. And I already know their general mannerisms. And that's a lot about how I think about my characters. I look at them more as people than I do as... You know, words on a page.
So it's you draw from the surroundings around you. So one point you would have would be for good character development is you draw the base of your characters from those around you in your life.
Of course, and I think every writer does, even if they don't know it.
Yeah, so, and I think it's a great idea personally.
Just to sum up your characters, you're saying that you know how they react, you don't care why they're reacting.
Well, if he's basing them off of people
in
life...
If it's relevant, then I care. If it's not, I don't
this
see
This character
why.
Hates carrots. I don't know why, but they hate carrots.
Yeah, and it might come up that, you know, their cousin stabbed them in the eye with a carrot when they were four. Yeah. Like, it's...
Like, I've had times where it's like,
funny, yes, you know, yes, it's a funny bit of flavor text, but otherwise it doesn't matter. And that's that is something I'm more inclined to think up on the fly as I'm
if
writing
I need
it
a reason.
Than it is for me to plan why this character hates carrots.
And that's true. One of the things is the longer the work, the more it's worth putting that kind of history into your character. The shorter the work, a short story, 10,000 words or less. You aren't going to run into a lot of situations that explain why your character is acting the way that he is, and you probably won't have to explain why your character is acting the way it is unless it's something extreme that it's like, okay, he's shooting up a school. Why is he shooting up a school? Well, he read a lot of Vore when he was a kid, and something with guns and Vore sex toys. And
you leave my sex life out of this.
Wall of dildos.
Funny story, that actually happened.
I still wish there was pictures.
If I was quicker and smarter, it would have been.
Have you guys all read Watchmen?
Yes, to a degree.
I've flipped through the graphic novels a wee bit, and I watched the movie, but...
I have seen Watchmen.
Blue Penis.
But you haven't read it.
I haven't read it, no.
No.
But Ozymandias. Would you say he is a perfect character, or would you say he has flaws?
Which character is that?
The main guy that set everything up.
Oh, the twist?
Well, the twist.
Well, like, as far as characters like Rorschach, I look to them like the brooding anime character.
Yeah.
The people that everybody loves.
So are we starting? We might as well just go into this.
Okay, we can go into this.
Okay, Mark! Mark! So, in that brief break, you missed us talk about Rorschach.
And his character
and
development.
Why you might not...
Did he actually develop?
No.
No.
Rorschach
was kind of the same character throughout the entire movie, wasn't he?
Yeah. I saw no development, but...
Well, yeah. I think he was there almost as the straight man to call them out on all of it. Because all of them are...
Well, he's like the... almost like a Dick Tracy kind of character. Like, he is the detective... The guy who's like snooping around and being in places he's not supposed to be to try to solve the bigger picture.
Ooh, here's a good one.
But
sorry, I'm
well just Rorschach wasn't the most interesting character for me is really
Take Batman. Is Batman an interesting character?
Batman's villains are more interesting than Batman.
Yeah.
Well, it's,
and I love Batman. I still think he's awesome.
Like I
would like to bring up the point that we have here is examples of what is not character development. All of my parents are dead.
Angst does not make a character.
No.
That was fine with Batman back when Batman was created. I mean, you look at when Batman was created, when Superman was created. There really wasn't much for escapism back then. So having a character of both angles.
Sorry if I interrupted what you were trying to say, Tarl, but...
Well, I was just, like, thinking, in the whole grand scheme of things with Batman, it's his character, yes, he has this history of the death of his parents, yes, he's got all this brooding and whatnot, but really, until, I mean, yes, he has some of the interactions with Robin, and until recently with his son, Damian Wayne, who died... And his whole dealing with that. That's character development. That's probably the most pinnacle Batman evolution of his character that's probably been for decades.
Yeah, the most interesting Batmans are things where something actually happens and he has to change, like the original killing of the first Robin. And I forgot the other example I had.
When what's her face? Gordon's daughter got paralyzed
by
Joker.
Oracle. Oh, jeez.
When he had his back broken by Bane.
Yeah, those were really interesting. Actually, the third Batman movie, as bad as it was interesting just for the fact that Batman got over being Batman and could quit being Batman. I don't think I've seen that anywhere, because Batman either dies or becomes an old man just in his cave and shallow and
creepy.
And I think there was a TED Talk about superheroes, and it made a point that there are a lot of superheroes without parents. Just about all of them, actually.
Wait, really?
There were a lot of them. You know, Batman and Superman, just to start.
Does Superman count because he actually technically has human parents?
Superman doesn't have parents, though. His parents are dead.
But he has the proxy parents.
Spider-Man.
Superman, it's not like he lost the midpoint like Batman and Spider-Man did.
I'm
siding with her on this one, because
he has the foster parent.
But he didn't know that they were his parents until way till later. So as for all intents and purposes, he still has a mom and dad, even as Superman later on. He never knew.
His parents are still dead.
Yes, but that doesn't actually do much to his character.
No, because they don't count as his parents.
What happens more is the fact that he's an alien versus.
Superman story becomes interesting. Is Superman trying to be a human is so interesting, but Superman in relation to the fact that he's Kryptonian and technically an alien is actually
one of his main reasons to struggle.
It's one of those interesting storylines where it's like, it's not just hi, I'm Superman, I can go around or whatever. It's hi, I'm Superman, everything I touch can effectively get demolished. I'm walking on glass or eggshells 90% of the time, and the only time I can really cut loose is when I'm beating the shit out of someone who's nigh invincible.
See, that is the other part of it that I just realized now, is that even though Superman does technically have parents, my air quotations are strong here, is that he is, you know, maybe not when he's, like, growing up as a kid, but, like, during his most impressionable period, like, you know, when he's, like, a preteen or a teenager, he is this kid with superpowers. He is this kid who's different from everyone. Not even his parents can help him through the transition that he's going through, because he's not human.
It's, like, the worst puberty
ever. He does have parental figures, but he does not have parents
that can help him understand what's going on.
He's got people to support him, but, like, it's...
What more would his parents do for him then? That's my question.
They could also be super powered and help him control his powers.
Okay, so bringing this back to where we're going,
we can turn into comic book.
Having their parents dead and having them be brooding characters does not a character make.
Now, if you draw from that,
well, it's
almost a trope though at this point.
Yeah, kind of like how a lot of the Pixars are like single parents.
It's kind of it's an unfortunate thing where the story's been written so much, and people take the tragic side of it too, so it's almost destroyed the legitimate plot points that are built off of someone with no parents.
Mm.
So, you know, I can easily think of Naruto comes to mind as far as my parents are dead and nobody likes me. my village was destroyed and my brother still rampages about. You know, like, just these people with these tragic pasts where, sure, if you're, 13, you're like, that is awesome. But, I mean, I've just heard it so much that the second that concept even comes up, I'm done.
I'm agreeing with that.
And that brings up an excellent point on the fact that when you're writing... part of the relatability and believability of your characters, remember who you're writing for. If you're writing young adult, one of the best pieces of advice I ever heard is write two years or two grades above the characters you're writing for. If you're writing for 16-year-olds, basically write an 18-year-old main character. If you're writing pornography, don't sit there and have your character be some person you would stick in a young adult. Don't make it Edward Collins.
Ugh.
You know, remember who you're writing for. Make it relatable to the character or the audience that you're looking for. I've mentioned this more times than I care to mention anymore, but Confessions of a D-List Supervillain. One of the best character believability and character relatability characters I've ever met. And it was because he was written with the flaws and his history is so packed with things that anyone who's a comic book fan most likely ends up having experienced as they grew up, because most people who are into superheroes are a very select kind of person, and he touches on so many of those subjects that you can't help but fall in love with the main character because he is so easy to relate to.
I think we have to point out, like, for the parents dying thing, that isn't character development as much as it is just a setting.
Back history.
Yeah, but if you go into, the origins of Superman or the origins of Batman, for example, like, take Batman Begins, where it starts out, whereas he's a kid and parents die and he's getting over it and all that, that is character development.
The reason I did bring that up was that it can be something like that can be a great catalyst for character development.
Or that falls
into when we were talking about your character's history and, you know, what you're drawing from to try to make that character. I also think just in general, when you're trying to make your character relatable or believable, is that, you know, based off our discussion with Rorschach, and, you know, it's really important to remember that not everybody's going to have the same, people have very different tastes and, you know, what makes a good character.
Very true.
So you've got people like Rorschach, which are like the gritty, dark, like, I don't take shit from anyone, kind of like almost anti-hero.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, like one of my more favorite characters, like the comedian, who just kind of plays off the whole life's a joke thing. I think he's probably a more interesting character than Rorschach, probably just because I'm less familiar to seeing a character like the comedian than I am to seeing a character like Rorschach. But a lot of people still really like that kind of character. So
what are some other things that don't make character development?
Mary Sue's.
Mary Sue's.
Might as well touch on it.
We're already talking about
Superman.
I've
been waiting for this. I did an old panel of this at RF.
I skipped that panel.
I had to learn about that, you know, when I was 16 and writing fan fictions. I think I'm a little fast.
If your character is a buffed supermodel who can pretty much has godlike powers, and your only flaw is you're shy around other people, is not a good character.
If you're also a character that just, you know, is like super klutzy and, you know, they're really self-conscious, but everybody likes them somehow for some reason.
So you're living in an anime.
They're really weak, except for this one, like, mysterious, awesome power that they have.
I can crook my finger and members of the opposite sex will fall all over me, but I'm so sure.
It turns out I turned into a werewolf that can shoot laser beams out of his mouth when I sniff flower.
Okay. Sorry.
This isn't Poppycat.
No, not Poppycat.
Also important is that these characters should not be how you wish you were in real life.
Keep your fanfics to yourself.
Keep your self-insertion to yourself, by which I mean inside of you and not on paper.
Or, you know, type it out and share it with your little friends on, you know, your little circles, but
there are
don't
plenty
try
of people
to
on fanfiction.net that would love to hear from you.
For sure, but just don't try to submit it to an actual publication, because they might just not have anything good to say to you, and you might have to go back and cry on your life journal.
If they have anything to say to you at all.
That's true. Some of them may just...
Anyways.
But anyway, yes. This, you know, when we went into what makes a good character, it's important to realize that your characters do have flaws, and important flaws. Not just like Iron Man. You know, Iron Man in Iron Man 3 has panic attacks that have
nothing
to add to anything. He freaks out on the side of the road, in a restaurant, and like some other obscure time. So it didn't do anything to add to Tony's character. It fell really flat. He would have been a better character if he didn't have those flaws at all. Because there wasn't a point.
I recall hearing at one point, please fill in if anyone can remember the source of this, but if you're going to write a story and put something in there, it has to be in there for a reason. So going to the Tony Stark example, Tony Stark has panic attacks. To what purpose and to what end does he have panic attacks? They don't do anything for his conflict. They don't do anything for his character. They don't do anything to hinder him or help him. Why are they in the story? You have to think about your own character development the same way. You know, as Roland had mentioned earlier, your character has a hate of carrots. Well, we don't care why.
I have a feeling you're about to talk about the same point that I want to talk about.
I'm just pointing out that what she's talking about is Chekhov's gun, isn't it?
Oh. Yeah, it is.
Chekhov's gun? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so basically, if you have it in the story, you have to have it there for a reason. If you've thrown it in there as flavor text, if it's not funny, or if there's no point, don't put random stuff in there. Yeah,
this is also I think it was a point in here somewhere, but if it's not relevant to the story, does it warrant removing it entirely?
Yes.
This is a question I always have sometimes when I read stories. I'm reading a large part of exposition. I'm like, do we really need all this? What is this doing?
Do I have to remember all this for later down the line?
I'm only considering this type of stuff like recently when I started getting into the writing groups and the more professional side of furry publishing. I had never considered, you know, like, this has nothing to do with the story in particular, so you should take it out. But now that I'm looking over people's stories, I'm looking at things more critically, that, you know, unless this has something specifically to advance the story, that it really shouldn't be in there, but I'm not entirely sure if that's true.
It's a bit of style.
You know, because flavor text does exist, and
it serves a purpose.
Pick on you at all, but the Cthulhu story, where you've got flavor text, and people that know about, you know, the other Lovecraft stories, love it. But it doesn't have anything to do with the story as it stands.
No, and it's there, so, much like a lot of...
And it's not exactly right to say, well, this doesn't belong, take it out, because,
It's part, you know, of the stories story.
Are there to be enjoyed, and, you know,
if it
doesn't always have to do with progressing the story. Yeah. A character can love onions, even if it has nothing to do with, you know, his progression in this world you're writing.
The example I want to use is Mary Ladd's story from Punk'd, but I don't think I can.
Well, we can always
mark. Can cut this out, but because there's the part where she's like, "Oh, I'm going to sell this to the military,"
right?
And you're just like, and nothing goes on with it,
right?
Just
absolutely nothing happens.
There's other people out there. There's there's this whole other market happening.
What is the military for?
How is the society changing? And then we just like, well, that's that, and move on.
Yep. Out the window.
That's that. We don't know if he makes any money off of it. We don't, because...
Well, and that's, in that regards, that's something that I do fairly heavily in all my stories, and I'm doing more as it progresses, is where it is. Here's a reference to the outside world, outside the story. Here's your three lines of text. Here's your comment about bug carnivals, bug zoos. Enjoy it. There's three lines of it. That's all you're going to get. But it tells you about the world that's outside of where the storyline is and helps you build a mental picture and the world around.
And one thing that I can be kind of bad for is that I don't look too far outside of what's actually happening in the story. There are other people around, and I sort of play off the fact that it's in a world that essentially already exists. It's just furry. So I don't have to worry about that all that much, but I tend to focus a lot more on the more immediate situations.
Feel free to cut this or not, but wasn't it Stephen King that did with his books that his flavor texts, he realized at some point that all of his flavor texts was consistent, and then he took that one character from everything and made one book that tied a whole bunch of others together because one character was consistent in every other book.
Well, no, and that's the thing, is that if you take a lot of paranormal genre books right now, they will sit there and make flavor comments about the outside world, and then you'll have people like Kim Harrison that will put together an entire book of, here's the world outside, here's these characters I mentioned or these situations I mentioned. And then there's also other ones where they will sit there, and that's what ties their worlds together, is that they have this one instance that happened, it's mentioned about, and then they'll be like, well, I'm tired of writing in this series, I'm going to write in the same world, it's going to be over here, and it's going to be the situation that I mentioned briefly for one moment in this book.
And I love that she does that. I mean, it does seem like flavor text in one story, and then you realize, oh, wait, that, you know, half a paragraph of description is suddenly four other books in the same, quote-unquote, world on a different series now.
One thing that I do enjoy, actually, is the continuity of characters throughout other stories.
Yes.
So you have this character, you know, it's like the books that people write, you know, you essentially have several different storylines that happen from people that cross paths. So like you've got one story, but like seven different perspectives.
Well, there was a trilogy, and they've done it twice now, and it's a Warhammer series, and it's Farseer, Outcast, and Exarch. And basically, you have the first book, and it details this life of this. There's three friends. Each in a book is about those characters. And you start off with the warrior and him going to his rage and becoming this basically unnameable warrior. And then you have his female friend that the whole reason that set him off on his path was she shot him down. And you have her whole becoming this, you know, can see in the future and whatnot. And then you have their third friend who's like, I don't want to live here with all of you. I've seen the stars. That's where I'm going to go. And then he goes off. But they're all tied together. So little bits and pieces of every book ties into this giant thing where you're like, you're reading the last book and you're like, holy crap, this is happening with her and this is what's happening with him. Holy crap, this all ties together. And
flavor so they're all developing.
See, that's a real good example of character development.
And that's the thing, is you can see how they each evolve as a character through other characters' eyes.
And they're also able to, they're not conflicting against each other. It's the fact that you're able to mirror one against the other and see how different they've changed from where they started.
Yeah.
I'm looking at one of the points I think you made, Ocean. The what to do when your character is Superman.
That's actually a good thing to do.
Well, and we were talking about that with in regards to like All-Star Superman.
Yeah, well, like, because Superman, the way I basically look at him, he's very close to being a Mary Sue.
Very close, but what is it that makes Superman different? Because like, he didn't start out as a Mary Sue.
Him from being a Mary Sue now?
Well, it really depends on which Superman you're talking about. There is like the nearly invincible, invulnerable, godly Superman, you know, who is not affected by kryptonite, can only be slightly harmed by things like magic and telepathy.
Yeah. He technically has no flaws himself, but what you're actually getting through his character is the development of him having to struggle against being good. What is morality? What are my limits? You know, like the fact where the guy's like, the bad guy will be on top, and he's like, I catch the bad guy, but they just threw a hostage off the building.
Okay,
I have to go save that hostage.
And there's also one like
self-sacrifice.
One of the Justice League episodes back in the 90s, where it was like, they go to the other realm, and it's what's different. Well, Superman got sick and tired of everyone's villains and started lobotomizing them with his heat revision.
Yeah, I remember that episode as actually.
That's pretty dark.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is when you have godlike powers and nothing can stop you, what's to stop you just going?
Because he comes back and there's like the one like indestructible character. He's just like, with his laser eyes, and they're like, wait, what? What are you doing? No, stop!
On the other side, we also have Batman, where although he's, I'm going to stop crime, but I will not kill, and everyone's like, because of you, we have these criminals because you elevated it up. And why don't you just get rid of them? You could actually just kill them and the problem would be solved.
Like, I think the commonality between these characters is that they're not flawed physically, but they are so emotionally scarred and conflicted that the fact that they are like nearly invincible doesn't matter.
It's the situation they're in. And would you call that character development?
No.
It depends.
I don't think I would.
It depends. If you, say, have a story of where you have Superman and you have his you know, he's seeing all this crime, and he's, and I mean, this is being a plot to a story where he sees all the crime and he's like, I can't stop all of this. He realizes the futility of, you know, he's spitting into a rainstorm and he can't stop it. And then he suddenly decides, well, now I've got to amp it up. And then he starts lobotomizing people or whatnot, you know, or he decides not to. And like, he sees what he can become through flashbacks, time travel, dimensional travel, whatever. Then you see him coming to terms with, I have all this power, I have all this responsibility, i.e. Spider-Man. You know, I cannot become this kind of character because I can become this kind of monster. I mean, look at Injustice League. Injustice, where that's literally what happens. Superman goes apeshit because he
gets tired of
kills Lois Lane.
Like, and it's hard to create character development in a single scene. So, like, you know, the hostage, or, you know, the bad guy taking the hostage and forcing Batman to make a decision whether or not to, you know, save a bank or save the hostage, that's not character development, but the impact on that character over time. So all of these single events are what makes character development. So Superman being invincible isn't character development. The effect it has on his psyche as someone who is invincible and has to make moral choices instead of, you know, the whatever other ones, you know, that is, you know, developing him as a character, because he's just nothing can hurt him physically, and it's essentially his decision to let things hurt him emotionally.
Yeah.
See, I think it is kind of character development. It's not developing him, but us as the readers,
if you take
more about him.
I think we take a single piece of a series of events, that is less character development than if you put them all together.
Well, it depends what you want to define, I guess, character development. Like, is the whole arc, or can just one piece?
Well, like,
the Stanley Parable. The first choice you basically made is, do I wish to go to the left door or the right door?
Yeah,
that's technically character development. Am I going to go along with what I've been told, or am I going to rebel?
If this makes sense, the situation, I don't think, is the character development, but the character's reflection on that situation is what moves his character along.
So does us learning more about how a character reacts, or... reacts, or how different things affect them, is that character development?
Or is that just reader involvement?
Some situations...
I would say it is character development.
Some situations are obviously going to have a bigger impact on a character than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the character changes from that particular event, if that event is so significant that something does happen, like, you know, your parents being dead isn't character development per se. Your parents
always has
dying
to be them
is,
changing, or can it just be telling us more about this character, going more in depth into who they
are? I think telling them more in depth with who they are and what they do, I think, is developing the character. However, character growth is something separate, where it's them blossoming as a character, making their own decisions and becoming a better or worse person. Because you can certainly have a character that starts off the book one way, and as it goes, the story continues on, he becomes worse and worse and worse, and maybe becomes unredeemable at the very end. However, in doing so, you've completely cut off relatability with your reader.
I understand where you're going, like, just chunks. And, you could set up a scenario where... You give your character a choice, and they make that choice. And then as the story continues, they change. And then, say, near the end, they're given that choice again. And now that choice is different.
I sort of see character growth and character development as a bit of the same thing, because when a character starts out, you don't immediately know what their motives are. You don't know why they are the way they are. But as things happen to show you more of what this character is about, that... they're also growing as a character at the same time that you learn what their motives are. So it's sort of the same thing. It's like their new situations are always happening as you learn about this character. So character growth goes hand in hand with character development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you need both to make a character. You if you're gonna have a cardboard cutout, you're gonna find out that whatever they choose isn't gonna matter. It's not gonna show anything about them, and it's not gonna change them.
If your character has no depth, then whatever situation you throw them into isn't gonna matter because it just doesn't. Your character's just not interesting.
You have to care about your character, because if you don't care about your character, you're not gonna care about your story. No one wants to read about a character, because if you don't care about your
character's gonna reflect that too.
Yes, it's completely gonna reflect in it, because
your story is gonna reflect that if you don't care about your story.
Exactly, you know? And that's always the thing, is like, how do I write good stories? Well, for one, write something that you want to write. Same thing goes with your characters. Write a character that you want to write. Understand that self-insertion and Mary Sue's and all this will not make a good story. People want to read about flawed characters because they themselves are flawed. Remember, you're doing...
Also, if a character has no flaws, everything is expected, and there is no excitement or tension because you're like, oh, well, he's just going to shoot her.
He's just going to breeze through that too, whatever.
Like, there reached a point for me when I couldn't enjoy certain things because I knew that everything would be okay in the end.
Still reading Dresden Files.
Like, it's one of those things, it's like, there is no real sense of tension because you already know how it's going to end.
There's no conflict anymore.
Well, a good character development and growth of a character is the main character in Heart-Shaped Box. He's a 56, 60-ish old rock star. He names any girl he dates after the state that he picked them up in. And he's having this one, and then through this whole storyline of him being haunted and people around him dying and fleeing with this girl, he learns about her as a person, and it's something he's never done with any of the girls he's ever dated. He starts calling her by her real name. He starts interacting with her as a person rather than a
arm trophy
/ ambiguous sex toy. And by the end of it, he's punched out a guy who molested her when she was a kid and did all these other things that he never would have done for any of his other characters. But it's because through the entire story, as he's learning about himself and his history with his abusive father, he's also learning about his interactions with others, and especially with women, and bettering it.
I figured out the source of the problem.
It was his phone on the wires.
Yep. Sorry.
No worries. But anyway, that was a good example of... Because, I mean... Right. Yeah, it's...
Well, that is pure character development right there.
Exactly.
Character starts, interacts, character is different than the beginning.
So what are some other things that people can do to make their characters?
One of the best tricks that I've seen is interview your characters, especially if you're having difficulty.
Now, that is something I've done.
Yeah.
Mine usually just goes along the lines of, what the hell are you doing?
No, but like, if you're having, especially if you're struggling with creating a character, take your main characters and go, they're on a talk show. Ask them questions. You know, what made you join the elite space corps? Well, every single character that's on that spaceship is going to give you a different reason. And some of their reasons are going to be not what you expected and are going to end up developing as a character. Because in doing so, you're developing a character.
In drama as well, I've seen people, like, they'll be that character and then they'll have other people ask, so what would you eat for breakfast today? And just so you get that mindset of, what is this person? Well, how would they think?
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I've suggested to others, is just interview your characters. Sometimes it's just write out a conversation between, you know, you and your character that's just sitting down for coffee, or just two of the characters sitting down for coffee and just them talking about random shit, because there's stuff that'll come up there. A personality will develop.
Well, in the same sense, in the story, you can have two characters talk, and that can help develop them both, or seeing how they both look at a conflict.
Literally giving your character a voice will ultimately, you know, you'll probably get a more honest answer out of that than just trying to write your character alone.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent can you model your characters off other people's characters or other stories?
I think as writers, we're kind of in that weird position where everything
the best writers steal.
when we write, we are taking from people in our lives and characters we've read or characters we've watched in movies, and we're integrating them in this soup in our brain and coming out with different character traits. And like, that's the thing, is take Trick or Treat, my story, Wild Night, where you guys were like, oh, that's totally him. But no, it wasn't just because it being a goth character. It was based off of a lot of goths that I've met as part of the goth subculture and just seeing their interactions, and then with integrations of abusive significant others and a bit of fantasy and all that.
See, that's where I get confused about myself. With the story I submitted to Dead North, the character in there is basically a preteen middle child. I have never been a middle child. And I don't know where I would
but
have
But that's
gotten.
Just the that's just the character, the way that she interacts.
See, and she is a great example for me of characters developing on their own pace. I set up with a different... I kid you not. I set up with a different type of character for her. And she ended up being a middle child. I didn't intend for that, but that's just what happened as I wrote the story.
And characters do that. And as a seat of your pants writer, that's going to happen, where your characters are going to take off on their own. And
they definitely took off on their own on that one.
And you can do that. But there are also those that are plotters, and they're going to want to set down those points, in which case things like the interview method and all that are key for them.
Yeah, well, if you're discovery writing is a great way to make sure your characters are developing, because you're basically going, here's my character, let's see what they do.
I find that even if I'm planning my writing, that it almost never...
Yes, I had that with my Taboo right now. I had a specific set, and I kept on having to rewrite things because one character kept on doing something different and be like, no, you like, can't do
it's,
that.
I think plotting out your writing is a great guideline, but...
It can't be the be-all end-all?
It's not going to ruin anything if you get off the tracks a little bit.
Yeah.
Who knows? You might end up with two stories out of it.
I'll believe that your story should flourish organically rather than, you know, something you specifically put on a paper. That is my personal opinion. I know a lot of people don't work that way.
I find if you struggle against your story and where your characters want to go, the more likely you're not going to sit down and finish that story.
Just
if
let
you,
them go?
If you the, let, you know, let the characters have their way, let them go and see where it takes it, because there's a good chance that your characters are acting the way that they are because in your mind, maybe not your conscious mind, but your subconscious mind, they're acting the way that they're supposed to. And the sooner you let them do so, the better they can actually blossom as their own characters. And you're going to find that your character development comes naturally rather than you forcing it.
Your subconscious is not a 6-year-old on sugar. Just let it do what it needs to.
Yeah. Like, some of the most natural stories that I feel I've written were the ones that I also wrote the fastest. Because
the story
took off and it went. There was no resistance. All the characters did as they were supposed to, and it ended in the, you know, the end goal that I was going for.
Mm-hmm.
So if your writing is flowing so well that, you know, you don't feel that resistance or anything, the odds of your characters growing organically in the way that you want them to, your characters are more likely to be believable, more realistic, mm-hmm. if they are coming out naturally in your writing.
Yeah. Don't fight the creative process. You're going to lose.
Even if you have to take away from the story you're writing, I mean, if your character wants to go in a certain direction and your story is demanding a set direction, why don't you just put your story aside for a few minutes and let your character go ramble on a new page and be like, all right, now that we've got that out of our system, can we please get back to the story? You never know. It might actually help.
Yeah. And, you know, you can always remove the stuff that
is rambling.
You don't want in there anyway. Like how I'm going to edit this episode.
I love it.
So, any other tools anyone wants to mention?
I don't know. I almost feel like the discussion about my trick-or-treat story is applicable here.
I think it totally is.
Because, well, let's just preface this, because I really do want to talk about this.
You can go and get trick-or-treat right now. It's on the shelves.
Go virtual.
Buy trick-or-treats. Rabbitvalley.org.
You can buy the hardcover. Not hardcover. You can buy the softcover, or you can buy the ebook.
Both Roland and Voice are in it.
And read Yana the story that Ocean hates.
Which is not my story.
Trick or treat.
No, it's my story. This
entertaining time. Is all heck. You should really just go pick it up. You want to support furry writers? Well, here's a new book for you to go out and support furry writers.
Sorry, speaking of planning and character development, if you don't know how tarot cards work, you might want to reconsider writing a tarot scene. Because that was the longest part of that entire story.
Table just see that's what it did already.
As far as planning for stories and like actually having a written thing, the tarot scene is easily the most planned and hardest scene I've ever had to write.
But see, and that's where the character thing goes for character development is you look at how like, and especially once I went through edits, how my Ibix dealt with his girlfriend and her entire stupid shitty attitude and the way she was doing things and how he dealt with it and kind of realized through the story of really I should be paying more attention to me than my shitty girlfriend.
Oh yeah, speaking of characters that we hate to hate, that girl. Oh my god. Just, I was like, I'm reading the story. I'm like, she is such a bitch.
Have you read it after edits?
And reasonably so. I think I did.
She's so much more of a bitch now.
Like, it's just, we start out talking about my character, but oh my god, the girlfriend in Tarl's story is such an unreasonable C-word of a woman.
A horrible beast.
A horrible cunt. And I've never wanted someone to die more than this woman because she sets him up and like knocks him down like all on her own.
So you're saying is listeners should go buy this book and but yeah, you should find error.
Out. Let's talk about
your story.
Yeah, and not that this is a bad character. I hate the character so much. Like,
but that's
to a point
makes her...
where it's like I want to put this down. It's making me so angry.
But isn't that a sign of a good book?
It can be.
In the book that I had mentioned to Roland, which is Bullies, Bastards, and Bitches, How to Write the Bad Characters. I personally don't like this book. However, if you are trying to write a character that people will follow simply because they are assholes, this is the book for you.
Let's see, when you guys keep talking about assholes and stories, I keep thinking, I'm looking at the shelf and I'm seeing Death Note, and I'm just thinking how much I hated the one main character in there. And not because, you know, what he was doing, I just felt that everyone else in the world was completely friggin' retarded. And I'm like, people would obviously pick up on this. This guy is not being that sneaky, and I just hated the character.
Yeah. And that's more of a fault with the premise, I think, than anything.
Yeah.
One of the things brought up in Bullies, Bastards, and Bitches is people will read a book with a character that they hate just to watch him fall.
I wasn't
waiting for him to fall. I was just mad at the world around him because I felt he wasn't going about it the smart way that he should be, and everyone else just seemed to be blind and ignorant to him.
Didn't you do that with your lizard?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think it depends. Like some characters might become a lot more tolerable if you're specifically setting them up to fall, and you make it obvious. Because if you see a character, the Mist, the Mist is a wonderful example of that moment that you stand up in the theater and cheer because that one
Carmody when she
person that you know his. You know, killed people, is a bitch, you don't like her, and throughout the entire movie, you're clenching your jaws and fists because you hate her so much. The second that thing lands and you just want to jump and cheer because you are so happy that, yeah.
So that's good.
So is that a case that of like is, a relatable character getting like, their comeuppance just for you?
That is, like, it's, yeah, like, they, you know, the story builds up this character so much. She is the leader of this group of people that are going insane with, you know, fear and hatred. And the fact that this character has been built up so much just for the most gratifying of endings. Like, it's, I hated that character so much. And it's not like I love to hate this character. It's, this character made me so extremely aggravated. But when she, I'm just going to say spoiler alert, when she bites it, that it's just so gratifying. So it's almost, it's almost,
I'm sorry,
like,
you just spoiled the fact that she died, but you've been talking about it for the last few minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, finally.
Anyway.
But anyway, like,
there is something to be said for a character that you absolutely
hate.
The
character that I hate to hate turns into the character that I love to hate, because when she finally gets that bullet between the eyes, I am just so relieved.
I can end the movie right now. I'm going to leave.
Oh, yeah, you're like, yeah, anyway, I'm done.
talking about characters and character growth and whatnot, so you wanted to talk briefly about...
Sorry, yeah, so on the subject of character development and what I still want to go back and look at this, but like what I feel is character development that sort of the situation is that, you know, you've got the one character who's, you know, a dick.
You're gonna spoil your own story on our podcast.
Not entirely, like the moral of the story is that he's supposed to have a revelation
And start being less of a dick.
Yeah, and start being less of a dick. Now, I think the biggest problem that Ocean has is that he doesn't really change.
I don't see the change. And I wonder why
I think
Lady Doe is still with him.
I think the reason it bothers me less than it bothers you is because I know how this story is supposed to end after the fact.
See, that's another, like, I was just talking to another one of my friends who gave me one of his stories that had published out there to read. And I read it, and I'm like, oh, this is good, but I felt the ending was very forced. Everything was too happy. And he's like, well, that wasn't actually supposed to be the real ending. What was supposed to happen was this, but because it's part of a larger story, we changed the story for the short story. And it's sad when things like that happen.
Another story that is... Because as much as I give people a lot of flack for things like cliffhanger endings, except that I seem to be so guilty of them myself. The Taboo story, for example.
Which story?
The Taboo story.
Yes.
How...
Yes.
The story was supposed...
We had words.
The story was supposed to end with a single text. And this also happened with the Taboo story. Instead of ending simply as the night ends, it's them in the kitchen having a discussion and all that. The story, like, the point I'm ultimately trying to make with this is that in the endings, these characters are supposed to have come out better somehow.
But that's my argument for your trick-or-treat story, is I don't see him being better.
Right.
And if your point is that he gets better in the story I haven't written...
Not even in the story that I haven't written, is it... The argument I try to make with that is that, you know, this isn't an immediate change.
Mm-hmm.
He is still, in essence, the same person. And with the way that it's written, I can see how you don't see it as character development because he's still a dick. He is still ultimately a dick.
I almost argue
that's his character, because you can still be like kind of a sarcastic asshole without
being just
a general dick. Yeah, speaking of sarcastic assholes, I'm available every Sunday through Thursday.
I understand, though. Like, I can see both sides of that argument. I can see, because him and I had words about the Taboo story, where it was like, it was one text. I can see where it was going. It's just, for me,
I think I have a bigger habit of implied endings and implied scenarios. So, like, this person... So
what is supposed to happen after the story stops?
He doesn't shove her drunkenly into a puddle on the floor.
That's pretty much it. Like,
or she finally go, wait, nothing changed, I'm leaving.
Because, like, if you think about it like picking up a new skill, you don't just suddenly pick something up and go, you know, fiddle around with it for a few hours, and then you're like, I am mastered at whatever this particular subject is. He's still human. The fact that they used magic to make him see the light, it doesn't change the fact that he is still the same person.
He's not supposed to be the same person if he's had a revelation. In the same way that in your example of learning a new skill, when you learn something new right away, you don't immediately forget it. Actually, usually it's fresher in your mind, and you start looking around the world very differently, I find, until it slowly bleeds into the back of your head.
I also just don't see, like, the particular situation that bothers you. Like, I don't see that as an offense, really. Like, you're looking at it from, like, he's the same kind of narcissistic, chauvinistic asshole, but... That's not how I see that particular situation.
My question is, if he's that narcissistic asshole, and then why is she still attracted to him?
Because
and then
women
and then,
like a bad boy? I don't know.
Don't look
There's
at me.
There's a difference between a bad boy and an asshole.
Don't look at me.
Like, and then it just makes me reflect on her character and just like, how pathetic is she then?
Well, maybe she
we can
was,
all relate to people like that.
Maybe she was abused as a child, like Stockholm syndrome.
It's okay. She was just
maybe
abused.
Maybe she's secretly like his sex slave and has just developed feelings for him.
So they're Gorians. Secretly, they dress up as barbarians and reenact the Tarnsmen of Gorno.
Oh Lord!
Like, anyway. I admit that her attraction to him is a little unwarranted. But I don't know about you, but there is that one person that you look at them and you're like, God damn, that is a fine individual, even though they suck as a person.
In physical form?
Like,
God damn, there's an awesome person.
How you doing?
Like, no, just the people that you're inherently...
You're supposed to be looking that way.
But his second point was despicable person, so I was looking at you.
Oh, I'm crafty.
But like, as far as the girl's justification for liking the guy is that, you know, I don't know about you guys personally, but there are people where I've had a physical attraction to them, and despite the fact that they are probably not the best of people, it hasn't always prevented me from pursuing...
You see, and I find
that particular relationship.
Yeah, I never ended up in Calgary for that reason.
No,
I find that, I don't know, I just, if someone's attractive physically, that's all well and fine, but the more I get to know a person, sometimes they just become nothing in my eyes because they're nothing for their personality.
I definitely agree with you. There are some people that become a lot more attractive as I know them, and some people that become a lot less.
We have this driver for our Staples. This is going to sound feminine and asinine, but when I first met him, when he first got the route, I thought, wow, he's incredibly good looking. Now that I know him more as a person, he's still really good looking, but now it's a case of you're genuinely like a really great guy, and I enjoy talking to you because I like talking to you, not just because you've got like boom shoulders. So
yeah.
You are so allowed to look too. Come on, don't even bring it.
Yeah, I know.
But just the thing is that
my fiance is looking at other men. I'm looking at Ocean.
You should stop.
That's a five piece of ass. I gotta Google something.
Do you feel lucky?
I didn't push that button.
I'll push it for you. This is why I said wait. Now you can make a comment.
Okay, so like I don't know what your personal experiences have been, but to me there's always been that one person that you shouldn't like, you shouldn't be attracted to them, but you just are.
My experience is I'm always the person that's talking to the one in the relationship where they're like, I hate my boyfriend, I wish he was more like you, and you're like, well, I happen to be available and single, and you have a phone in which you can call your boyfriend and, you know, destroy your relationship, but no.
You didn't do it my way, just have sex with him?
You don't tell about that part.
Ah.
Awkward silence. I'm leaving this in. But, like, you know, you... One of your problems with these characters is that the girl shouldn't like the guy, but sometimes things just are.
The guy's an asshole. I don't see him having a revelation other than the fact that she just kind of wants to be in a relationship, and he goes, oh, I guess we should have a relationship.
I'll
smarten up, and then he doesn't smarten up.
I'm gonna write
granted, there isn't much time for him to smarten up. And then meanwhile,
which is part of what I'm arguing about. Because the story just ends, and it's implied that he's going to become a better person.
I'm pulling a Roland. I'm getting mad for being interrupted. Meanwhile, on her side, like, she seems to want to make this work, wants to have a relationship with them, accepts his apology, and then even still gets embarrassed about it in the end. And it's just... It's fine, but there's just enough... there that it just tweaks, and if you tweak one part it screws up another part. And
I think you're just taking the last little bit a little bit too seriously. It's meant to be lighthearted. It's not
she's not dying
of embarrassment. He's like, yeah, I had sex, and they're all his friends, they're friends. So I don't see any maliciousness in this.
No, my thing is I don't see a revelation in him.
Well, I'm going to write a part two and fuck your couch.
Cool.
So my he's not sleeping on your couch there, anymore?
Yeah. Like,
Let's finish this up. So.
I think the main problem is just that there isn't enough time to demonstrate.
I think we could just go on this forever.
Yeah, because I could have just said everything got better, but I figured it was always implied.
Well, like I said, the one example where you could be like, you could be about to do a disregarding mark, pause for a second, go.
No, yeah. Because I would totally high five a bunch of people if they're cheering me on about having sex.
Well,
that's me personally. So unless you think I'm an asshole,
anyway, the story got published and has seen print. So
go read it.
Yeah, I don't know what changes have actually been made.
I would love if people could read it and weigh in on the situation.
So another reason for you to go get Trick or Treat, read Roland's story.
Join the argument.
Do you think his character is being redeemed, or do you think he's still an asshole? Okay.
So we've talked enough about Trick or Treat.
Yeah, that was a very long discussion about our own stories.
You should buy it.
So,
I think we've pushed it enough.
Okay, so there are two other releases that have happened in this time that we get to promote.
Tell us about your latest story that's been published, Inara.
I have mine that I actually have to...
Okay, as mentioned before, I do a lot of writing underneath my real name as well. And I've had another zombie story of mine released. It's actually available in bookstores, and it's called Dead North.
That's your trope, zombies. No.
Unfortunately, so far my trope does seem to be zombies, because that's the only stuff that's going to actually see in print.
Women betrayal, zombies, action, and depressing.
Okay, action isn't a trope. Okay. Let me write some more stories, and then you guys can yell at them.
So anyway, this one's actually available in bookstores in addition to Amazon. It's called Dead North, and it's edited by...
Correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but
Sylvia Moreno Garcia. And it's a Canadian publishing company. In addition to... this book's actually going to see some school courses with it in the...
curriculum.
In the curriculum. Mm. So that's actually kind of really cool.
And... Are you done?
Yeah, I really like my work.
Where can people
one.
Go get it?
You can find it on Amazon. You can find it in Chapters, or you can go.
Is it on Amazon.com as well, or just .ca? Because
it's actually both. Because she's got pretty good reach. Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, Chapters/Indigo. So, in addition to her website as well. My brain just went.
Google Sylvia
Moreno Garcia or Dead North. It is the second edition. And it's Canadian Tales.
And in my news, currently available in ebook format on Amazon.com, print books coming out soon, is Blood Type, an anthology of science fiction or vampire science fiction on the cutting edge, edited by Robert S. Wilson. All proceeds go to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, basically, so your money's going to a good cause. It features my story, I Was There, as well as stories from Peter Watts, who wrote Blindsight, Tim Wagner, who wrote Like Death, and Laird Barron.
Oh, this is the one that had all your favorite authors already in it, right?
Well, Tim Wagner's, I've read his like a lot of his stuff, and I like it. Peter Watts wrote Blindsight, which I just finished reading, and absolutely one of the most terrifying science fiction books I've ever read. And the one I actually found out that Laird Barron was in it, he writes a ton of horror, and he's won a lot of awards, and I saw that he was in there, and I was kind of like, oh my effing holy crap, what the hell, and I'm in this with him, and kind of flipped my shit and was like all sorts of Facebook.
You were so adorable.
So apparently I was adorable. Right now the ebook's available on Amazon.com. Print books are coming pretty soon.
Sweet. I think the only other thing we got a shout out for is, speaking of him again, Chipotle Coyote Watts Martin there. First issue of Claw and Quill is out, so go check it out.
And Al Flora is writing Drunk.
Is that new?
No. Probably not, but
yeah, I was just amused. I took a look at the Claws and Quills, and so far it looks pretty good. Like, there's three articles that I saw.
Yeah, there's three. Usually, like three or four to five, I think.
Mm-hmm. I haven't actually checked that out yet.
Check it out. He's also looking for people who want to submit articles. So, if you want to write something nonfiction about the fandom or a review or something, let him know.
So, thanks again for listening to us.
Please send us your feedback.
Send us emails.
We really do like emails.
Podcast at fangsandfonts.com.
FANGSANDFONTS.
Yes, FANGS, not fawns.
A's.
No A's, no deer, no nothing.
We may suck at replying, but we do read them all.
FANGS.
I think I'm going to try to get better at actually replying to people. Also, we're on Twitter.
We are.
At fangsandfonts. Please send us a tweet. Let us know what you think. If you have ideas for shows, guests you'd like to hear from. If you just want to talk to us, you can also find the four of us on Twitter.
At Roland Ferret.
At Ocean Tigrex.
At Voice Spider.
At Yanara.
Otherwise, I think that's it from us. Anything else?
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Stop putting yourself in stories.
Buy our books.
Buy our books.
We're broken, poor, and need your money.
I don't actually get
proceeds from this book. So
neither do I. So
you finish just editing, read my Punk'd, stuff. You might get some money.
The Cystic Fibrosis Federation gets my money, so go for it. Support a good cause. Oh, I'm doing Movember. Ha ha! Prostate cancer. I guess two thumbs up was kind of
cancer.
Prostate cancer, because everybody has one. Well, every guy has one.
Shut up. You kept saying buy our books. It sounded like fire our books.
Fire no, well,
make
no
burn,
book burnings.
They can burn our books all they want as long as they buy them.
Don't burn books. That's not nice.
I prefer they didn't. I'd prefer they didn't burn our books.
Read Roland's and my stories. Get so upset at the characters that you burn the books.
All right, I'm turning this mic off. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.